without the quorum. And Representative Atkins, welcome to the committee. We do have, I would say, about a good third of this committee that is also on Representative Mariani's committee. But unfortunately, we have two-thirds who were not. So you'll have to help us, those of us who aren't on that committee, explain the bill again. So if you please could do that, and we'll move your bill as soon as we have a quorum. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's a pleasure to be here, and we'll try to do my best to give you a reasonable overview of what the bill is, and then I have some outstanding folks that are here to testify. Very briefly, what the bill does is it's $85 per student for AP, pre-AP, and IB, or the expansion thereof. The figure represents the average cost, based on a 2005 sample survey, of what it costs to expand those programs. The funding can be used for books, supplies, course and program fees, hiring staff, or training staff. In addition to the outstanding testimony, and I'm going to let that stand on its own, there were a couple of points that I wanted to make just myself. Number one is that this bill enjoys wide bipartisan support. It's the governor's language, but there are a remarkable number of Democrats and Republicans that stand behind this bill. It also makes an enormous difference for low-income students, and I know for some of you, you already know this, but from 2001 to 2005, there was a range of 362 to 816 students that took AP and IB coursework. In 2006, following $1 million in funding from the state, that multiplied tenfold. There were over 8,000 students in AP courses in 2006, low-income students that were now able to take advantage of AP programming. The final point that I would make is that this raises student performance across the board, not just among the creme de la creme of our students, but literally every student that has an opportunity to take pre-AP or AP or IB coursework. Whether they get it for college credit or not, the findings have shown that once they get into post-secondary education, they test better, they do better, they succeed more for the sake of having taken that that coursework. And with that, Madam Chair, I would turn it over to, and by the way, I like the fact that there's no quorum, because then you can't vote me down. I figure I got real strong.
Not yet anyway. And furthermore, you'll find when we actually move the bill, everything in this bill is loved and laid aside for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
I understand, Madam Chair. And with that, I will turn it over to my own superintendent of schools from South St. Paul, Dana Babbitt.
Dr. Babbitt, please reintroduce yourself for the tape and welcome very much.
Well, thank you so much. My name is Dana Babbitt, and I'm superintendent of South St. Paul Schools, and what a pleasure it is to be in front of you today, and we thank you for your time. I know that you're very hardworking. You've got a lot of things to read, but if I could ask for your indulgence just to look in your folder and pull out the folder that does say South St. Paul Public Schools on it. And there's a lot of information in here about international baccalaureate programs, and We need to educate a lot of people on this, but it's an absolutely world-class program. This year, at the start of the Minnesota School Boards Association meeting, they had a keynote speaker that walked in and just happened to talk with me briefly. But when she talked about her keynote address, she said that international baccalaureate was absolutely the strongest and best educational system in the world. We have in your folder just a brief, very brief summary of what the primary year's program is. Second page is on there. The middle year's program at a glance. International diploma program at a glance. Then the myths and facts. You've heard some things from some organizations talking about what IB is and what it isn't. Here are some myths and facts dealing with all of those questions. A couple great articles from Time. And I'm going to just take one excerpt from the last article that you have in that side, and it basically says IB has a long and proven track record of providing well-defined, rigorous curriculum. It should come no surprise that a recent Newsweek listing of the top 500 schools in America had 7 IB diploma schools in the top 10 in America. So that's there. Then on the right-hand side, you see two letters from students. One is actually last year's graduate attending Stanford, talking about how good the program was for her. The other one is a 1993 graduate that just sent us a letter out of the blue, and she was able to get her degree in pre-med at the University of Minnesota in 3 years. So that was because of the credits she had for ID. I don't want to go with the rest of that stuff. Is you can read is just quick stuff about ID and a couple PR pieces for South St. Paul in there too, quite honestly.
Of course.
But I would like to turn it over to a couple of parents that have much more to say than I do.
Thank you, Superintendent Babbitt. Before we get, the parents can please come up, and I think since we now have a quorum while you're getting settled, I would move House File 804 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Atkins, please introduce your next witnesses.
We have two parents here from South St. Paul Public Schools, and they got some great testimony. I had Representative Chair Mariani and I had an opportunity to hear from them on Tuesday of this week. And the stories that they can tell you will wow you about the IB program.
We're ready to be wowed. Welcome, and please state your names for the tape.
My name is Krista Edson, and a little bit about myself. I grew up in a family of two teachers. I was a teacher until I married someone who decided to follow the corporate world around the country. And as we've moved around the country, I have been a volunteer for the last 19 years, primarily in schools. We found out about 4 years ago this month that we would be moving to Minnesota from Vancouver, Washington, where I had a freshman enrolled in the IB program. My first question was not, are the winters really that bad? It was, is there IB in Minnesota? Got on the internet, found 11 schools, screened them by internet, by phone, and picked six of my top choices and came out and visited. I then chose my top three, brought my son out. He went to school, talked to students, talked to teachers, coaches of sports he was interested in, and he chose where he would want to go to school. At that point, we looked for a house. I knew that nothing but IB would matter, and I knew we probably would not relocate here if there was that IB. It is the most rigorous, the most well-rounded educational program available in the United States. And I had no doubt that that's where I want my children to be. So we started school in South St. Paul, and I live in Eagan. I live in the Eastview District. I praise South St. Paul as being this hidden gem, like you won't believe. They're kind of sick of hearing me say that. I did start a parent group in South St. Paul because I figured that was the one piece that was missing in that fabulous program, a parent group to educate themselves and educate the community and those in the rest of the state about IB and about what it does. We're sold on it, and we need to sell that to others.
Thank you very much. If you could state your name for the tape and welcome.
My name. My name is Mafusa Ali. And you must be wondering what I'm wearing. I'm wearing two buttons. It says Harvard Parent of 2008 and 2011. As you can see, I'm very proud of my two daughters. And also, I want to say in this button, vote for IB. wearing this button also empowers me to be very passionate about IB program. Without this program, I don't think my two daughters would have been accepted by Harvard University. When they are going to the high school, we did some research, trying to find out what program will be well suited for them. And we know about AP, PSEO, and IB. And we read all of those. And the description of IB program struck us so strongly. Like, if you have to have an IB diploma, you have to have three very major requirements, which are a TOK, extended essay, and test. And those three programs, no other items you have to have in any other program. So those really made us to decide to send them to school, because you can take a course high level, you can get a strong A or something, but you cannot develop a habit being a good person. So those three things, I like to read a little bit about what is that TOK means. This trains you how to think, how to become a philosopher. One of the things it says, what is knowledge? From where do you get your knowledge? How are your benefits justified? How do you protect perceive the world around you? I cannot see with my glasses. Do you know anything at all? So that really prepares you how to think, how to become a philosopher, which is a very powerful training for a small kid, little kid, high school kid. And then comes to the extended essay part. all the IB curriculum, I saw my kids study for some courses, and most of the time they are doing research, doing writing. Writing is a big part of IB program, which is so good to become a good writer when you go to college. This is one thing you have to do quite often, especially to IB League schools. They are big in writing. So not only that, you have to write an essay, extended essay. To do that, you have to do research, hours of research, and organize it, present yourself. So this trains you how to do research and how to be a good writer. The third thing comes to is CAS, C-A-S, CAS. CAS means, I want to read for you, is...
And before you start reading, I should let you know the time that we were setting aside for this hearing is actually... You just concluded it, and I think we have more people coming, so if you could be very precise, because we want to hear from the students.
Just one few more seconds. CASUL is creativity, action, and service, those three things. So that program, IB program, really makes you to work on those things. That really makes you a better person in the world. So to get into Harvard or Ivy League, I think IB program really helped us tremendously, and we really like to continue with, I have another daughter that goes to IB program too, so we like to continue with the IB program and that she can follow her older sisters. And also, you know, by going through this program, you can be a better person and better citizen going through those rigorous training.
Thank you so much. We've heard from the passionate parents. Now let's have Atkins. You've got some passionate
students. We do. We have some folks that live this day in and day out. Young people from Minnetonka that are also very articulate.
Welcome, and if each of you could, when you, before you speak, state your name for the tape, and could we hear your grade level and your school as well?
My name is Mitch Biebekhauser. I'm a 12th grader at Minnetonka Senior High School, and like Susan said, I'm an IB student. Before I got into IB, I was in all G or general level classes at my school. So I really felt a strong contrast between what I was learning before I got into IB as compared to what I'm learning in IB. And the main chief difference that I noticed was that in IB we discuss and we really try and understand what we're being taught. It's not just said to us. We learn it. We try and soak it in. And with that, we really attempt to apply it to all kinds of different classes. Like we'll take what we learn in history and apply it to language by saying, well, when was this book written? Why was it written? And in reaction to what? What motivated things to be done? So really you get a difference between knowing and understanding what you're being told, which is really great for me. And but what that does is present a really strong challenge that really drives you to work harder. But the challenge is really attainable, and it's something you want to reach, because when you do, you're left with this much greater sense of understanding than compared to what you would be understanding in any general level courses or anything different than IB. What was mentioned before is what really incorporates and puts all the classes together is TLK, where we really focus on why we know things and how we came to know them.
Thank you very much. And if you could state your name for the record and your school and grade. Welcome.
Hi, my name is Casey Garvey Hall. I'm a senior at Minnetonka High School. I am a full diploma student in the International Baccalaureate program, and I knew I was going to be in the IB program before Minnetonka even offered IB. We're the second group of seniors to go through, so it's a relatively new program at Minnetonka. The reason I chose to be in IB is because IB lets you discuss things in depth. Like Mitch said, you assess people's motivations for what they're writing, and you're not just told what to think, but you think for yourself. And when I learn, I need to know why things are like they are for me to fully understand it. And IB allows me to do that. And not only does it allow me to do it, but it makes you learn to do that. Outside of my science class, we have not had a multiple choice test since our sophomore year. You have to know it. You have to be able to articulate it well. And I think that's the most important thing that IB offers students. The other thing that I really love about IB is that it gives students the option of a variety of choices. In our extended essays, for example, you can choose any topic that you want, and it allows students to find what interests them. And I think a program that allows that flexibility and that creativity to flow is an excellent program. Just one additional point is that every single college interview that I've gone to, when I tell them I'm an Ivy diploma student, they say, you are taking the most rigorous program your high school has to offer.
Thank you very much. You two, I bet, are friends being in the same high school and the same grade. Do you have those deep discussions and disagree occasionally?
A couple times.
That is great. You did a wonderful job. You know, I'm going to, before we hear from your last testifier, Representative Atkins, I want us to, I was supposed to announce at the beginning that because we're on TV and the Mary LeGraves from the television studio here has said that there is some type of significant audio buzz in this room. And I neglected to remember to ask, but I'm going to ask now if anyone who has a cell phone, a BlackBerry, I know you probably courteously have it on vibrate, but would you turn it off, please? Because it's hard for people who are listening to these bright students at home to understand what they're saying if we have all this technology in this room. We've never had this problem before, so you can see where we're getting in the world with technology. I'd also like to have Representative Mariani, if you read the minutes. All right. Any discussion? The minutes have been moved. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Same sign. The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. And we'd like to get to, we have just one legislator question, so I think we will have time if you could be very short, sir, about your testimony, because we're like about 5 minutes over the hearing. All the hearings today, we've asked them to be like 10 minutes. A couple of them, because they're duplicative, we've asked for a shorter time, because we have a lot of people, at least in the other hearing, that are very interested to testify on, especially International Baccalaureate, and we want to hear from them. So, welcome, and if you could say your name for the tape.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Chapin Hall. I'm Casey Garvey Hall's father, and I just want to make just a couple of points. One is that sometimes you hear a discussion that IB is at the expense of the AP or advanced placement. That's simply not true. In the Minnetonka School District, we have seen AP enrollment go up side by side with IB enrollment going up. Also, a couple of other issues I just want to indicate is that some people think that it's somehow un-American because it's an international standard or that it has an anti-religious bent. I can tell you that my household has a deeply committed Christian belief, and we're patriotic Americans, and I can tell you we are so proud of the IB program. And one of the things I'm most proud about is Casey is in her sixth year of Chinese, and she understands the culture, she understands the language, and whether she goes to China as a missionary or working for the State Department or for business, she's going to be able to interact with the Chinese, develop trade, develop a dialogue, get along in peaceful commerce, and I think that's good for Minnesota, it's good for the country, it's good for the world. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hall. That's a very good note to end on, and I have to say that I have a nephew who teaches International Baccalaureate. He's a math teacher, and he's well beyond my scope of things he could do, I'll tell you that. Representative Swales has a question.
Actually, not a question, Madam Chair. I just wanted to say that oftentimes these very wonderful programs exist in schools because of leadership. And you may not realize, but Dr. Dana Babbitt was also my principal for a number of years. And he was very inspirational in our school. You can see he's doing the same thing in South St. Paul. He also served as Minnesota Principal of the Year while he was at Woodbury High School. So leadership is about optimism, and it's about the future. And with people like that believing in our students, we have a bright future ahead of us. I just wanted to say that.
Thank you very much, Representative Swales, and congratulations to Principal of the Year Babbitt and now Superintendent of Inspiration. Representative McFarland.
Madam Chair, could I ask a question of Dr. Babbitt?
You can. We might as well back up now that he's red in the face.
I'm a little embarrassed, yeah.
I know South St. Paul has great reputation for the IB program. What I'm wondering is, what percentage of your students come to your district for in open enrollment for the IB program? Maybe not percentage, but even numbers.
We have 258 students that leave our district to either be homeschooled or go to private school or another public school. We have about 640 students that come into our district under open enrollment. A large percentage of those will be for IB. We are a little bit different than some schools. Our IB is not a school within a school. We offer it to every student. At least 40% of our students take at least one IB course. And we're switching to a K-12 IB program so that we want to give this opportunity to all of our students. And we're a highly diverse, lower socioeconomic area, and we're finding our students are doing quite well.
Madam Chair, are you able to fund this through general fund or through foundation monies, or how can you fund it?
We're one of the few districts that...
Superintendent Abbott.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. I'll do that, Chair. We're one of the few districts that are not receiving any additional funds right now, and so that's why we're looking for help. It is costing us between $350,000 and $450,000 per year more than we would be spending otherwise. In addition to that, we offer all-day K every day for our kids because we think that's important too. So we are we're not going to be able to sustain this forever at this point, but we are looking for help.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much. Julie Quist is asked to testify, and while she's coming up, is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? Okay, welcome, Ms. Quist. If you could restate your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. This is Julie Quist. I'm with EdWatch, and I know I only have a couple of minutes, so I'll cut to the quick. Had our Policy Education Committee testimony 2 days ago. A question that came up privately afterwards was something in regards to what exactly is the IB curriculum, and to answer that question or to help us get there, I know you had in your handout this particular document, and if you could go to that on page 10. This is called A Continuum of International Education, and on this page it discusses the focus, the core of the IB philosophy. And in that, they discuss a major focus underlying the philosophy of IB is the acknowledgement of diverse values. And leading up to that, what they're discussing is getting acquainted with your own culture, your own national background, and that is to the way you learn about your culture.
People don't miss what you're saying.
Okay.
It's in the South St. Paul folder. And that is the one that looks like this, and page 10. And could you tell us again exactly where you are on the page?
Okay, page 10. If you go down to the middle of the page, that first paragraph under fostering development of universal human values, it begins by explaining what they just covered, which is that a major focus of the IBO philosophy is the acknowledgement of diverse values. And they're referring there to the values of your own nation, your own culture. And you learn about an appreciation for your own culture, your own nation. But they see that in terms of diversity and multiculturalism. But once you're at that stage, then the most important thing, according to them, is to foster this development of universal human values. And that really is like the bottom line, is getting to that universal set of human values. Well, what is the human values that they are discussing? In the next paragraph, they talk about what that is defined as embodied in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which is the UN document that was passed in 1948. And they specifically reference Article 26 of the Declaration of Human Rights. And they mention, they don't specifically say that the rest of that Article 26, which is, and I didn't bring that up with me, I have a copy of it at my seat. What it says in Article 26 is that it is promoting the values of the United Nations. That's essentially what they're saying. So they've defined universal human values as whatever the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights and the United Nations defines it as. The problem with that is that for Americans, we believe that the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, and the Bill of Rights are universal, that they're true for all people in all times. They're God-given rights that are given to people, and that it isn't just for our culture. And that is the reason that we consider the IB core curriculum to be anti-American or un-American. It isn't because individual people who take it are un-American, and it isn't because teachers who teach it are un-American. And it isn't because administrators or school board members are un-American. It's because the curriculum, the core curriculum, is replacing the American principles of inalienable rights that are above government with the principles of the United Nations. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Ms. Quist. I don't see anyone else on the testifying list. We have one last legislative question, which we have about 1 minute to take. Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This isn't a question, it's just a statement. For the historical record or whatever record, the Declaration of Human Rights, which was introduced into the United Nations Charter, was written by the United States. And it was one of the major victories over the totalitarian states at that time, particularly the Soviet Union. And it was used then throughout the Cold War to bring the Soviet Union and other totalitarian states to account for their abuse of human rights. So I find the Declaration of Human Rights in the United Nations Charter eminently American.
Thank you very much, Representative Benson. I can see what a wonderful teacher you were with your knowledge and values. All right, Representative Atkins, do you have a closing statement?
Just briefly, Your Honor, and members, we spent most of our time talking about IB because I know with the composition of this group that most of you are very familiar with AP and pre-AP, and I appreciate that. It's not to minimize the value of AP, and we hope for your support with respect to that. IB is somewhat misunderstood by a few people, and that's why we spent most of our testimony there. There are a couple of points that I wanted to make with respect to IB, and that is the IBO organization does not own or control or manage any schools. Local school districts continue to make all the curriculum decisions. Many higher ed institutions, both denominational and non-denominational, accept IB credits, and IB schools still use and meet all state and local standards. With that, again, this is a proposal that raises all ships. It's good for kids at all income levels. Even those that don't get college credit for it are better prepared for post-secondary education. And with that, I'd very much appreciate, on behalf of this very articulate group, we'd appreciate your support.
Including yourself. Thank you, Representative Atkins. And we will lay House File 804 over or possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Representative Bingham. What did I say? Bingham. Welcome to the committee, and Representative Bingham, do you have anyone to move your bill, or would you like me to move it?
If you want to, that would be great, Madam.
Okay. I do. I want to.
I do have some friends on the committee, including a former teacher, Representative Swales, so maybe she would like to.
Representative Swales.
On behalf of my former student representative,
this is like old homework today.
I would be delighted to move your bill.
Thank you. Representative Swales moves House File 417 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, and welcome Representative Bingham.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. For the sake of brevity and time, this bill, you've already heard the benefits and the positives of IB. This is specific to South St. Paul School District, who currently has a diploma program or the high school level IB program. This extends that into for elementary and middle school. For the International Baccalaureate program, it is a pilot program for 5 years where they develop their plan and report to the Commissioner of Education and for assessment and upon its completion. This is a very good program, and I'm proud to be the chief author of this bill. You know, myself and the co-authors of Representative Atkins, Hansen, Chair Greiling, and Representative Abler, and I think Representative Tilbury as of this morning, all want to do our part to help the governor on behalf of Minnesota and on behalf of the legislature to become more rigorous. And we're doing our part to have students complete a more rigorous program. So with that respect, I will turn it over to the principal of
Lincoln Center,
thank you. Garland.
Okay, please restate your name for the record and your title. Welcome.
I will, thank you. My name is Connie Garling, and I am the principal of Lincoln Center Elementary in South St. Paul. We have a large elementary school that I serve, 875 students, kindergarten through sixth grade, so we have a big job to do. Thank you very much for the opportunity to talk about the primary year's program of International Baccalaureate, why it's good for students in my school, what we in South St. Paul can offer as a pilot program to other schools that would also be interested in deep and meaningful school reform. As you may know, both the primary year's program and the middle year's program of International Baccalaureate were developed to prepare more and more of our students to be academically able to participate in programs like the IB Diploma Program or the other advanced programs that you all know about. In PYP and MYP, the Minnesota academic standards are embedded in the curriculum, and the expectations about deep understanding about American history and patriotism are clear there. There's simply nothing about IB that challenges American values or public school expectations, and at the same time, through the IB programming, the academic rigor, the thinking skills of our kids, and problem-solving expectations for our students is elevated well above what we would consider traditional Minnesota public schools' typical offerings. I've been an educator in Minnesota for the last 19 years, and I've had the opportunity to see many, many programs come and go. And in my school, as an IB candidate school, we're still fairly early in our process. We're working toward our authorization, but already what I see is a deep impact in the performance of my students. Because all of our students participate, every student in elementary and middle years participates in our PYP and MYP programs. It raises the bar for all of these kids. I've seen the results in my students' academic engagement, in their interest in their subject matter, and their excitement about school. And their behavior with their peers and their teachers has improved greatly. I recently talked with a parent of a fifth grade boy, a young man who's capable of doing above grade level work. She reported to me not long ago that her heart was broken because at 10 years old, her son looked at her and said, "I no longer need to read books. They don't interest me." Well, when his fifth grade class started working on their PYP unit of inquiry about Civil War, he was sparked, inspired by the complexity of thinking, the depth of the discussion, not just reading and answering questions out of a textbook about American history, but he started to read everything he could get his hands on about the causes and effects of civil wars all around the world, and specifically details about our American history. He learned things that his mother never knew. She shared the story with tears in her eyes. We are teaching children to think, to inquire, and to be driven to find out more information and to solve problems. The effects of PYP on our educational staff have also been profound. The teachers are supported by the most effective training available. They are guided to deeply understand the big picture of curriculum development and interaction to incorporate the most effective instructional strategies that they can. As a school, we have learned ourselves to break down barriers to communication and to create the conditions to learn and for true collaboration between our professional people. As a result, our teachers are highly invested and motivated and engaged. There's a palpable energy in our schools now, and it is a drive to continue to improve. So why should South St. Paul be a pilot program? We're a very small district. We have two elementary schools and one junior senior high. We're located in the metro area, but our size is often commensurate with out-state schools. We're working on an entire system change. Our own action research is exploring teacher motivation, closing the achievement gap, increasing student participation in these advanced placement kinds of programs, diploma program at our high school. We're looking at how we can increase our students and our community involvement and creating real life opportunities for our students to engage in social action. We can give back because we can show the impact of an intensely designed district-wide reform. And we can offer strategies and processes to make school improvement much more efficient. The IB programs are proven to be effective models to increase student achievement and raise the bar for all kids, as you have heard today. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Principal Garland, another inspirational principal. Rep. Demmer.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And Principal Garland, you did Garland?
Yeah.
I got it right.
Yeah.
At You partially answered this, I guess, in closing after I decided to ask the question, but and I guess I'm assuming that you're the one to answer this and not represent a victim, but in the second page, line 2.17 to 2.20, it talks about the completion of the final year, a comprehensive assessment of the success of the project will be prepared. And I'm wondering, you sound like you're already convinced, so what is the pilot going to tell us? We're not trying to figure out if this is a good thing or not, in your opinion anyway. What will we learn in the 5 years? How are we measuring the success, and what's it going to tell us that we can extrapolate out to a statewide policy basis?
Ms. Garling, thank you. Part of what we need to prove is that it does have a substantial effect on student achievement. And those are things that I don't know for sure yet. We believe that that will happen because that's what the research has shown has happened in other international baccalaureate schools. But part of what I think we're going to be able to show, because it is a whole system effort, in some school districts, when a primary years or middle years program is developed, teachers can choose to leave that school and go somewhere else. Part of what I think we're going to be able to show is where teacher motivation happens deeply when it is a truly district-wide reform. So that's also one of the things that I think we'd be able to say. We can speculate, but until we see the effects of our student achievement, ultimately that's what will prove.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, that sounds good. How are you going to measure that success?
Thank you. What we use right now to show that success is the Minnesota Comprehensive Assessments, the MCA2s, as we see the clear relationship between the standards and those assessments. So that would be one of the measures we would use. We're also fairly clear data processors and know that multiple measures would be the way both Minnesota state academic standards and our students' individual achievements would need to be analyzed.
Real quick, because we have misrepresented Detmer.
Thank you, and I know
we always mix up Demmer and Detmer. So,
well, thank
this
you,
is all you get, Representative Demmer.
I know, we always get short of time, and I won't try to dominate. But I guess, in along with that, the MCA2s are good. But as we've talked about value-added type things, it would be interesting to see if you couldn't incorporate something to see if the rate of achievement also changes.
Yeah.
Because as we've been having a lot of talk about the need to have value-added assessment, not just these snapshot assessments where it's tough to compare. Just a thought, Madam Chair.
Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Testimony. This program was introduced in 2004, am I correct?
We began our...
Ms. Garling.
Thank you. Sorry. We began our process in 2004. We are still in the candidate phase of our process. We are not complete. It does take a number of years in order to make the overall change.
Representative Detmer.
And I understand that this is a district-wide program. It's been put into the program without state funds, and so why should the state provide additional funds now?
Ms. Garling, part of when other IB schools around the metro area and in the state, and we attend meetings with people from all over the United States, more often than not, there's been some kind of federal, state, or outside organization help to fund this kind of program. South St. Paul, our budget is not big, and we haven't experienced any of that kind of support. And so we are asking.
Representative Bigham, and then I will, and may I ask, is there any public testimony on this bill? Okay, then we'll take Representative Bigham, and then we need to move on because we've got several bills.
Chair Grimling and members, just to both represent Demmer and Detmer's comments. One is that before the funds are just first, it also has to be approved by the local school board and commissioner. So there is, checks in place. And also have to remember that when there's money being used for a specific program like IB, you know, that the benefits can be weighed and distributed and worked with other districts, too, as far as the benefits, if other districts wanted to do it.
And members, as usual, we have a lot, some bills on the agenda that are for all districts. We have some for individual districts, and that will be our task to decide, which mix of bills we want to put in the omnibus bill. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
And Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move that House File 233 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Representative Hilstrom moves that House File 233 be moved for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, and we don't need to welcome Representative Hilstrom. She's here on our committee already.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Essentially, House File 233 is identical to bill you just heard, except it's for the Brooklyn Center School District. my bill has a lower number.
We're probably going to have a few more of these tomorrow in different names.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It is for a pilot program for the Brooklyn Center School District to expand to IB. Brooklyn Center does currently have IB at the elementary level, and this is an attempt to expand to the high school level. We would be an entire school district that would have IB, and we think that it would apply. I have the superintendent because the last time this bill was heard, I was asked for statistics about my district and why we would be a good site, and I gave them, but I was off a little, and so now he's going to give you the correct information.
Superintendent Lester, welcome, and please state your name for the tape and give us the correct statistics.
I will do that. Thank you, Chairperson and members of the committee. My name is Keith Lester. I'm superintendent of schools in Brooklyn Center. And it's a pleasure to be here. I'm sure you hear that a lot, but it really is, because the last time I was here, my mind went blank at one point, and I want to try to make up for that. So,
well, this is a hearing of making up for things.
That's right. Let me start by saying that if you want to know about IB, you've heard wonderful things, and so I won't try to share a whole lot about IB. I believe all the things that you heard, I think they were extremely effective in conveying that, and So I will try to stress more of the data and the why Brooklyn Center, perhaps. Principal walks in, this is Earl Brown, our elementary school. Principal walked into a kindergarten classroom and noted a young student in there who was struggling with an assignment. And he said, "Can I help you with that?" And the student's response was that she could figure it out herself because her teacher had shown her that she was knowledgeable. And because of that, she believed in herself, and don't worry, I'll get it. And that's a sample in kindergarten of the kinds of supports that are being built underneath our students. Our elementary school is a PYP candidate school, and we are hopeful to hear within the next few days that we are have been authorized as a world school. And if we don't, forget I said that, but we should be. And we found it to be highly successful. We are drawing more students, where our students are succeeding more, our MCA scores are reflecting improvement based on that and a number of other things we've done. The high school needs to move ahead. They've got work to do. We need to close that achievement gap, and that is primarily what I want to say today is, as you've heard, we think this can close the achievement gap, and when you hear our statistics, you'll see that we have it in spades. So, poverty. We're 64% poverty right now, and that the closest comparisons to us in that are Minneapolis and St. Paul, that are at 72% and 74%. No, that's wrong. It's a little higher than that, a little lower than that. ELL, our English language learners, we're at 28%, and as far as I can tell, the only school district that has a higher percentage is St. Paul. We're at 70% in diversity, and here's where we're talking about closing the achievement gap. That's higher than, I think, any place in the state, and here's where Minneapolis and St. Paul are 72 and 74% respectively, and we're at 70%, so we're very close. We look a lot like Minneapolis, St. Paul. We don't look like anybody else, and I think that's good. Special ed, we're comparable, 12%. Open enrollment, we're 28%. Our mobility rate is 22.31, and once again, that's a very high figure for the state. Can be a challenge, but we don't think so. We see that 4 years ago, Earl Brown didn't meet AYP standards, and they do now, and even in the last test that was much more difficult, our scores went down slightly, but we stayed out of trouble with AYP, even with our demographics, and we are an all-school, and we are going for an all-school program. Enrollment went from 825 and 980 in the past 3 years in that building, and a lot of that is because of open enrollment, and we were funded through a magnet program grant, and that grant runs out at the end of this year. And maybe any of you know that we're also in statutory operating debt, so we were grateful for that, and definitely would need some help to move forward. Students are more motivated and engaged, and we're seeing a lot more happening with parents getting involved and people wanting their kids to go here. Why Brooklyn Center? A district of 2.8 square miles and only two buildings. I agree with Dennis Morrow, who used to be superintendent in Brooklyn Center, when he said, Brooklyn Center and schools like it are the only place in the state that you can get up in the morning with a good idea and implement it by noon. It doesn't take much to move because we don't have the bureaucracy, we don't have the size, we're 1,700 students. Okay, she said to shorten it up.
Yes, in fact, it is right to end because we have people at the last hearing today who have driven quite a ways to get here.
Okay, closing the achievement gap, I think we're an ideal place for it. In spite of SOD, we've done some successful things, and gee, I really wanted to tell you another kindergarten story. Can I click it?
If it takes 2 seconds.
Five. Kindergarten student, once again, African-American male. Another student in class says because of her religious background that there's no such thing as Santa Claus, Easter Bunny, and so on. And the student got up and said, he said to the class, African-American student, he said that to his peer that she was not being very open-minded. He informed her that a number of her classmates do believe in Santa Claus, and she was not being very caring to say otherwise. A class discussion ensued amongst the students about how to be caring and open-minded. The teacher observed, didn't say anything. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you. I would just like to add that at one point in time, the Brooklyn Center School District tested in the bottom 10 schools in the state. And through this program, they are now making adequate yearly progress, and we would like to expand on that. So with that, I would renew my motion that this be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you very much. Is there any testimony for or against this bill? Please. Welcome, and please state your name for the record.
Hi, my name is Sue Peterson. I'm just a mom. My concern is, I've done a little research on International Baccalaureate. When my district, I came in at a board meeting, found out they were moving forward with International Baccalaureate, and it went on the fast track, and I'm seeing this here. I'm seeing one-sided testimony. There's also criticisms of the program, too, and I'm not seeing a lot of opportunity to let that side be heard. That's what happened in my school district. When they found out there was opposition, they shut the discussion down. They went to the Chamber of Commerce and the Realtors Association for their blessing, and that's where it stopped, once they got that blessing. Around the country, schools that have had International Baccalaureate, once they've been in it for a while, people have seen it, got to look at it, they're starting to come out in opposition, and I think you have an opportunity here to take a look at both sides seriously and not move the suit quickly. Just take a good look. And about the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, I believe it's Section 22 that says the rights in that document are determined by the UN, where our Americans' Declaration of Independence, our rights come from our Creator.
I'm sure that was
I didn't recognize you, Representative Benson. Ms. Peterson, thank you very much. And I appreciate your testimony. We are trying very hard to listen to all sides, and we have today. The next, we have now no more legislators on the list and no more testifiers unless there is somebody. Thank you very much. Representative Dabney. And in order... Pardon me. Oh, thank you. Representative Dimmer has just let me know that there is a very nice contingent of students from the Future Farmers of America, FFA. If you could stand up, and is there one brave person who could tell us, are you all from the same school?
No.
No. Okay. How about the first person who stood up? Could you tell us where you're from?
I'm from the
So you're from southern Minnesota, Mountain Lake, and the others are people you've met here today, or were you friends before? Well, welcome very much, and I'm sure you'll learn a lot. We have a lot of controversial topics going on in this committee today. Thank you very much for being here, and I'm going to start with Representative Dabney can move his own bill. And to give you an idea, because we do have, you have three testifiers, I believe, and Representative Faust's bill has, at least I have on the list, one, two, three, four, and we do want to get to public testimony. So, Representative Dabney, you're hearing, counting the public testimony, we'd like to end at 3:20. So if you all your testifiers could kind of judge the time accordingly. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd first like to move that the House File 1088 be recommended to pass and referred to the Education Finance. The further recommendation referred to the Higher Education and Workforce Development Division. Madam Chair, there's also an amendment in members' packets. It's the H-1088-A1 amendment. I'd like to move that at this time to get the bill in the form that I prefer.
Representative Dabney moves that House File 1088 be recommended to pass and laid over for possible consideration in the omnibus bill. Oh, no, this one, excuse me. Yes, this is a different one. I have to do a different thing here. That it's be referred to the higher, or be referred to the Education Finance Committee, and then further recommendation to refer to the Higher Education and Workforce Development Division. And now Representative Dabney has moved Amendment A1. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The song, It's a Long and Winding Road, suddenly came to mind. Do we need to vote to accept the amendment,
yes,
this time, Madam Chair?
I just wondered if you wanted to say anything about it.
Certainly. Thank you, Madam Chair. If you look at the bill, the page 2, line 15, we're filling in the blanks.
All right. Representative Dabney is filling in the blanks with Amendment A1. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted. And Representative Dabney, please proceed. And I see you have some very esteemed witnesses here.
I do, Madam Chair. Thank you. Briefly, members, and I have asked all the testifiers to be brief. We've got, I think, one other. College and schools, I would encourage you to think of as a complementary program, complementary option for two AP, IB, and PSEO. What College and Schools does is expands the menu of options for highly motivated and high-achieving students, but also teachers, schools, and districts. Because students are not the only one who are challenged by College and Schools curriculum. So are the teachers in the schools. And my testifiers will speak to some of that. Teachers are mandated in CIS classes to participate in 22 hours a year of staff development provided by their higher education institutional partners. That training strengthens the rigor of education, not only in the CIS class, but has a spillover effect as that teacher teaches all of the classes in their curriculum. In the policy committee, we brought in some students, we brought in some lobbyists, not that there's anything wrong with that, but today we're focused much more on the on-the-ground folks. And I have, as my witnesses today, if I find my note, we have Mr. Warren Peterson, who's principal at Cloquet High School, Mr. Larry Ward, who's superintendent at the Eden Valley Watkins High School, Ms. Cindy Christ with the Minsky System, and a Mr. Mark Biskins, who's an administrator at the St. Paul Conservatory for the Performing Arts.
How did you pronounce that again? It's kind of a hard name.
Thank you. Yes. Senior members may recall that he's appeared before this committee in the past.
And we welcome former Education Chair Mark Biskins, Representative Mark Biskins. Welcome.
Why don't we start with go ahead. Ms. Christ from the Ministry System.
Please restate your name for the record. Welcome.
Madam Chair, my name is Cindy Christ. I'm System Director for P16 Collaboration for the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities System. I'm going to speak briefly. I counted. I have four sentences, although I work in academia, so they're long sentences. But, four sentences addressing some questions that were raised previously about credentialing. of concurrent enrollment teachers. We've convened a task force monthly since October to bring together representatives of our system campuses, that's faculty and administrators, and K-12 education to address credentialing of concurrent enrollment teachers and related issues of that are critical to the quality of teaching and learning. Warren Peterson serves on that task force, so he'll be able to answer questions you may have about that. Through our work, we reviewed an array of program standards from across the country, and we conducted a survey of practices by our institutions currently in terms of what they charge for concurrent enrollment, instructor qualifications, and faculty mentoring practices. Just about 2 hours ago, we concluded our work by reaching agreement on proposed language changes in our system procedure to address concurrent enrollment. And those changes include identifying components of agreements between districts and colleges and universities to bring greater clarity and consistency to our practices, and more importantly, I think to you, language that describes the qualifications of concurrent enrollment instructors by recognizing how faculty are currently credentialed or improved by our colleges and universities while adding an option for approving teachers who do not meet those quote-unquote regular faculty qualifications. In total, we think our new language, which will now move through our internal review and approval process, but because it reflects such broad constituencies, I think we'll move ahead without any problems, tries to keep focus on appropriately high-quality standards while recognizing that there can be more than one way to demonstrate quality and that we can balance equally important dimensions of quality and access.
Thank you very much for your four sentences there. Mr. Dabney, who's next?
Mr. Peterson.
Principal Peterson, welcome, and please restate your name for the tape.
All right, thank you. My name is Warren Peterson. I'm the high school principal at Cloquet Senior High School, about 20 miles south of Duluth. I'm also the board member that represents the principals of northeastern Minnesota, but more importantly, I'm married with four wonderful public school children. So I kind of speak, you know, from a couple of different vantage points. I truly appreciate your time. I have to speak, I think that the college and the schools is really the third leg of the AP, IB. I think this is the third leg of that conversation. Greater Minnesota is significantly reliant on college and the schools, and I guess my perspective coming here would be to address how it impacts our schools in an extremely positive, vital way. It's simply the most significant, rigorous, challenging choice option that we have in northeastern Minnesota. Simple put, it's the financial benefit to the parents and to the kids is frankly what keeps many of those kids in school. With post-secondary enrollment option, over the last 10 years that I've been at Cloquet, I don't think we've lost more than a handful of kids that have gone outside of the school because of our college and the schools program. And that is a significant financial fact. Look, four quick things. Number one, I think access provides, Representative Dabney's bill provides access to all students. For us, regardless of economics or whatever, it allows these kids to get a jump start. The kids that are academically, that need that challenge will have that opportunity to, regardless of their economic situation, to gain college credit and college experience. Number two is it provides the rigor and challenge to the high school students that if you walk through a high school today and you want to see that hunger and that thirst in their eyes, you go to those classes and you say, you know what, that's why they're here. I think we've heard a lot about the debate about the meaning of high school. This program really, for our school, has provided that hunger and that thirst for those kids. It keeps them there and it keeps them challenged. Thirdly, this bill would provide some really key financial support to our high school. Without this bill, for the first time in about 18 years, we are looking, matter of fact, yesterday we met to discuss again some possible cuts, and for the first time in 18 years, colleges and schools could face some cuts in our school, and I think the effect of that could have a real tailspin in terms of where kids go and funding goes, and that cycle would continue. Finally, high school students, I think one of the main benefits is they gain that high school, positive high school experience, whether it's drama or debate or music or athletics. And socially, it's so appropriate for them to gain that, but at the same time, academically, some of these kids gain that that challenge that they really need to continue in their education. So I want to thank you for your time. And just a very quick financial addendum. Northeastern Minnesota, I think, is indicative of a lot of other districts, but we've, in the year 2000, we had 50 FTEs in our high school. We now have 39. We've lost 11 FTEs. In the same period of time, we've only lost 20 students. So where we've lost 11 teachers, we've lost 20 students, and the impact that that has now in our decisions, it has our options for courses on the remedial end and on the college and the schools end. We're faced with, do we need to continue to start chipping away at the end and just try to be a mediocre kind of a school? This bill would allow us to do some of those things to keep that rigor there. So I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson.
Madam Chair, next, staying with the impact of CIS on the schools, Mr. Biscuits.
Welcome, Representative Biscuits. Welcome home.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. It feels like home. Madam Chair, Mark Biscuits, Academic Director at St. Paul Conservatory for Performing Artists, a chartered school right in the heart of Chairman Mariani's legislative district. And I thank you for the opportunity to come before this committee and speak to this college and the schools program and its benefits. I will echo everything that has been said so far, but to also talk a little bit about opportunities that it gives the kids, especially students who come from limited means and limited family means. One of the biggest benefits that we have found in CIS courses in an urban setting is that we have a number of students who are high flyers who might be able to succeed and do very, very well in a PSEO program, but simply can't get to a college. They don't have the means to overcome those logistics. When you can bring the college course to the school, you bring it to the students, and that's been tremendously successful. Another aspect of the logistics issue is that when a student has to leave the public high school to go take a college course in PSEO, they also have to factor in travel time, which takes away from learning time. In CIS, the travel is from one room to another just down the hall. And it keeps the kids in the school, it keeps the kids engaged. Much like AP and IB, you don't lose your high flyers out of your building. They remain part of the culture and climate. Tremendously beneficial, and Madam Chair, I hope we have unanimous support for Representative Dabney's bill amongst this committee.
Thank you, Representative Biscuits, and this is the one bill, members, we are going to vote on today. Representative Benson.
Just a quick comment, Madam Chair. I'd just like to, echo my support for Representative Dabney's bill. I and a colleague of mine wrote and taught a college and a course program through the University of Minnesota called Political Economy. And I would like to also indicate that it does not mean that students who take college in schools cannot also participate in some way with AP. We had it as a voluntary thing, which was a requirement in reality. All our students took the advanced placement to the college board test in the spring. And they're very complimentary. And it's also a wonderful program for saving money for parents of limited means. We had hoped in Edina to spread it to the point where the students who took that coursework could, in effect, earn an entire year of University of Minnesota credit. If you could think of the amount of money that would save, looking for saving money for taxpayers, this is a great way to go. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Benson. Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm not sure to whom this question should go. It's about NASEP accreditation. And if you could comment on or let us know which post-secondary institutions are currently accredited to provide college and school training.
Ms. Christ.
Ms. Chris, to answer that, we also have others in the audience who'd be able to speak to it.
Madam Chair, Representative, currently there are just two institutions in Minnesota that have NASEP accreditation, the University of Minnesota Twin Cities and the University of Minnesota Duluth. The process of accreditation is relatively new, maybe within the last
3 years.
that institutions have actually been able to complete the accreditation process, and that's why Representative Dabney included the language to provide a window of time, if you will, for institutions to gain that accreditation.
Were you not completed?
Well, I was just going to say we have several other institutions that are in the process of seeking accreditation, but only the two campuses have it at this time.
Rep. and Faust.
Madam Chair, just to put a finer point on it, there are three institutions in the state that have provisional accreditation. That's Mesabi Range Community and Technical College, St. Cloud State University, and University of Minnesota Crookston.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Representative Powers, did you have any questions? No, I'm just kidding. Is there any testimony for or against this bill from the public?
Madam Chair, if we could just go to Superintendent Ward from Eden Valley Watkins. I think he can speak to some of the financial barriers that are currently in place for CIS classes.
Okay, and is there any testimony for or against in the audience so we can judge our time? Okay, Superintendent then.
Yes, I know you missed me from Tuesday. I'm down here on a different topic, and my last name is Peterson, too, but they're calling me Ward today.
Oh, my apologies.
But it's actually Peterson, but just so that it's two different people here today. So I can be Larry Ward today and Larry Peterson on Tuesday.
Welcome, Superintendent Peterson.
We've been in the College and the Schools program since 1994-95 through the University of Minnesota. We're the farthest school out that operates with the U as a partner here. Been very, very, we're 75 miles away from the University of Minnesota, and yet we found the program to be the cornerstone of rigor for our kids out in a rural area. Our kids can earn 30 credits that we have set up. We're also working with our junior colleges with some credits. We're also working with the technical schools to provide credit. So one of the biggest opportunities that I think this program can do is that it can provide opportunities for all kids through the gamut of the kids that you have in your building and give them an opportunity to challenge themselves as they go through school. I'm especially concerned with getting the technical schools on board with credit as well for the kids that are going into that area to earn technical credit as well with College and the Schools, and we're one of the forerunners out in our area in making that happen as well. I think it's an excellent program. It's been cost effective. People have talked about how it's saved families money. It's also challenged kids, and I think one of the discussions this session has been challenging kids at the end of their careers in high school, and College and the Schools does that very well. We have approximately 25% of our seniors are taking a College in the Schools class and getting College in the Schools credit. We have approximately 60% of our kids going on to post-secondary education. And we have approximately 40% free reduced lunch where we're at. So we think we're doing very well in that area. We think this is an excellent bill, and we'd like to have your support. And we want to thank you for listening to me again.
Yeah, thank you so very much, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Superintendent Peterson, what is College and Schools cost in your district in light of the fact that this bill would allow an eligible district to receive $150 per pupil who's enrolled in concurrent enrollment?
We're spending between $20,000 to $25,000 a year to bring the program. That includes all the partners that we have. And I think, like I say, our strong support from our district with that program and from our parents and any help we could get, I would appreciate. Probably one of the biggest costs we have is when we send our teachers and our people to come down to the U to meet, like once a quarter or once a semester, and send the bus down here, that's $400 a pop, just the transportation costs. for us to do that. And again, you make choices on what you think is cost effective and what you think is best for students, and it is a great program for kids. We think it's done a very good job.
Thank you very much. We're going to have to close the hearing for this bill because we do have people from out of town for the next bill as well. So, Resident Dabney renews his motion for House File 1088 be recommended to pass and re-referred to Education Finance with further recommendation to refer to Higher Ed and Workforce Development. And so unless there's further discussion, all in favor of this bill passing and going on, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails, and the bill is passed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members.
Representative Faust. And Representative Faust, we don't need to welcome you either since you're a member of this committee, so please move your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that House File 806 be passed and held over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Representative Faust moves that House File 806 be recommended to pass and laid over for possible inclusion. And if people, I know there's some passing, but if we could give our attention to Representative Faust. Please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, for, Madam Chair, and the rest of the committee for moving things along today so we hopefully have adequate time to cover this. What we're going to talk about today is career and technical education, and I believe that everyone will be getting one of these little pamphlets which explains what career and technical education is if you're not familiar with it. And I'm going to just briefly talk about why I think this is such an important thing to have extra funding in our schools for this. And there's three reasons that I'd like to discuss. The first one is that we need to have a higher student to or a teacher to student ratio on these classes and programs, partly because of the tools and equipment that they're using, and in order to make sure that we have safe classrooms, it's just important that we do that. The second thing is that a lot of the equipment and tools that we use in these classes are very expensive. One of the classes that a lot of schools have is auto mechanics, and analyzers for auto mechanics today are very expensive, can cost them thousands of dollars, and so the tools and equipment is much more expensive than it is for other classes. And the third reason is I believe it was when we were at the Humphrey Institute when we talked about the number of jobs or the percentage of jobs 10 and 20 years from now that are going to require a four-year college degree. And that number is going to stay almost exactly the same over the next 10 to 20 years. The percentage of jobs that require no high or college or technical degree goes down to almost zero. But the technical skills jobs are going to increase by almost 300%. And that's what this bill is designed to do, is to help provide our employers with more employees that have the technical skills that they will need. So that's why I believe this is such an important thing. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Julie Halverson, who is a career and tech coordinator from the Osseo Schools. That way it won't be me that calls someone the wrong name, and it made it much easier for me. So thank you.
Ms. Halverson, obviously I've called a few people a wrong name today, too. Please identify yourself for the tape.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Julie Halverson, and I'm the coordinator for the Career and Technical Education Programs in the Osseo School District, but I'm here also on behalf of the Minnesota Association of Career and Technical Administrators, who actually proposed this to a number of our folks for consideration. So if you would allow me first to thank Representative Faust for moving this bill forward and authoring it. We're asking for an increase in career and technical education aid. And just for the record, for those of you that maybe don't know all of the program areas associated with career and technical education, education serves business and marketing education, agriculture education, technology, engineering and manufacturing, family and consumer science, health occupations, work-based learning, career development and counseling, a number of programs in that area. Also, I'd like to bring to your attention that the most recent data we have is that we serve approximately 163,000 plus students in the state of Minnesota in our program areas. That's a significant amount of students in our state. Also, on behalf of Minnesota programs, we thank you for the opportunity to actually take a look at the language in the bill, and we ask for your support for an increase in this aid. And I won't take any more of your time and testimony because we have folks that have traveled a ways today to talk to you. So I'd like to take this opportunity to introduce our first person who's been willing to share his information with you on behalf of CTU students in Minnesota. Ray Hoheisel, on the far left, is the Executive Director of the East Central Minnesota Workforce Partnership, and he's also a retired superintendent of 20-plus years in the Cambridge-Isani School District. Ray.
Thank you, Ms. Halverson, and welcome, Mr. Hoheisel, another name that Representative Heidgerken and myself, Representative Greiling, like. These EIs that keep their spellings and pronunciations, even though we're in America. Please re-identify yourself for the tape.
I'm Ray Hoheisel. I'm the part-time executive director of the East Central Minnesota Workforce Partnership. The partnership has been in existence about 12 years, and our members include banking, healthcare, energy and manufacturing businesses. We have the Pine Technical College and Cambridge Community College, 5 K-12 school districts from Cambridge, Iskina to Princeton up to Mora over to Pine City and in between. An adult basic education consortium, nonprofit agencies that are interested in getting people to trained in jobs, DEED, the Workforce Center in Cambridge and Mora, and Minnesota Jobs and Training. One of the long-standing goals of the partnership is to promote career and technical education, both in K-12 and in post-secondary. And why is this true? Because our business partners see career and technical education as an important building block for the continued success of their businesses. For example, the HR director at Nexen Group, a precision manufacturing company, said 14% of their jobs require a high school education or only a high school education. 70% of the jobs at their company require technical education training. The HR director at a local nursing home said that their nursing home is short 15 nurses. The average age of their staff is in the mid-40s. Many are nearing retirement, and it's very difficult to find replacements. Both industries, manufacturing and the healthcare, say that loss of career and technical education at the beginning training level, where the seeds are planted, is hurting their business, even though they have extensive education programs in their businesses. They've all made the point that it's vitally important for young people to have career and technical education opportunities available in high school if we're going to keep a strong manufacturing and employment presence in our region. But why all the concern? Because career and technical ed classes are disappearing from K-12 schools. School districts in our area that once had 3 or 4 industrial technology, we call them shop, and teachers now have one. And each year there's more erosion. And basically what's happening, as the requirements in other classes increase, the more expensive and the career and tech classes are the ones that are being cut because they're elective. What has contributed to this situation? In 1977-78, the state aid for vocational education was $16 million. It dropped to $11,335,000 in 99-2000, and it went to zero in the year 2001. This change in state policy appears to have contributed significantly to today's dilemma, and that's had some spin-off effects. Without hope for teaching jobs, young people choose not to enter the vocational teaching ranks. Subsequently, because of the decline in the number of students in the teaching preparatory programs, the colleges have dropped their training programs. And basically what's happened, Minnesota school districts need to go to Wisconsin to recruit teachers. And if they can't find them, they drop the program. So it's a vicious cycle. And according to employers in our region, the situation needs changing. Other states, including California, North Carolina, and Florida, are just doing that. They've put significant funding into career and technical education. Last spring, we had an employer conference where DEED Acting Commissioner Ward Innes had a manufacturer's roundtable, and the number one workforce issue brought up by the manufacturer's president was introducing manufacturing careers to young people in the schools. What evidence do we have that school programs influence career choices? The school districts of St. Francis, Cambridge, Isani, and Princeton formed a vocational cooperative 30 years ago. For the last 10 years, they've had a state-approved apprenticeship program. Last May, the teacher in charge of the apprenticeship program spoke at one of our partnership meetings, telling her of her experience with placing apprentices in jobs that span pathways and businesses. She said that students gravitate to places of employment that correspond to training programs available in schools. She gave several examples, one of which was healthcare. St. Francis and Cambridge Isani have health occupation programs. Princeton does not. There were five healthcare apprentices, and all five of them were from the two schools, Cambridge Isani and St. Francis. Princeton had none. And if you look at the welding program, the electronics, and the machining, the same holds true in those. And I think she had about 28 apprentices. What students see and know from their high school is what they select as apprentices. So I'm here representing the businesses and our partnership today. And we strongly support this bill, and we believe that it can provide long-term benefits for our state, for East Central Minnesota, and for the people. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hoheisel.
Madam Chair, I'd like to introduce
Ms. Haverson.
I'd like to introduce our next person to give testimony. Her name is Mo Amundson. She's the actually serves as the chair of the Education Committee of the Governor's Workforce Development Council. She also is liaison between the Rochester Public Schools and Rochester Community and Technical Colleges. Mo?
Thank you, Chair Amundson. If you could restate your name for the record.
My name is Mo Amundson. I serve as a liaison between Rochester Public Schools, Rochester Community Technical College, I serve on the Governor's Workforce Development Council, and chair of the Education Committee.
Welcome. Thank you. Please give your testimony.
I'm going to be very short and sweet. In my position, I have the opportunity to create partnerships between secondary and post-secondary education. I like to call it the opportunity to serve the kids' buffet of career pathways. And as part of that, those pathways, they get to try out things, they get to decide what they like and what they don't like. But in the ultimate end of that, they are able to choose a career pathway in higher education that is seamless, that ends in a high-skill, high-wage job. If you ask why I want you to support this bill, it's because it's good for all kids. It's not good just for a few. It's good for every kid. Career and technical education is good for every student. It will continue to increase the three R's that we all hear about, rigor, relevance, and what result. And they're already built into our current programs. They're built in by industry skills certification, by college tech prep credits, and by regular college credits that we get at Rochester Institute of Technology and University of Minnesota, both recognize these credits. So I want to thank you very much. We also hope that by supporting this bill, we can personalize an education plan for each student to achieve success in their career.
Thank you very much. Mr. Schoenfeld, if you could introduce yourself for the tape.
My name is Jerry Schoenfeld. I'm the Executive Director for Minnesota Association of Agricultural Educators, and I'm mindful of the 3:45 ending time.
Questions are stacking up, and we have to get public testimony
I wanted to mention just briefly that, for instance, when you introduced the Future Farmers of America. I work with agricultural education, and I think a lot of people think of it in terms of farmers. FFA even is not the Future Farmers of America anymore. It's just simply called FFA these days.
In any case,
you did see a blue wave that came across the Capitol today, and there were about 200 students here that were wearing blue jackets who are in the FFA. In agricultural education, it's a little bit unique in the fact that we have got three components. One is classroom learning, one is supervised agricultural experience program, and the other is the FFA, which is an intracurricular part of the educational system. We serve 23,000 non-duplicated students in Minnesota. There are 186 schools that have ag education. Many of you that are in the metro area probably are not as aware of that, and yet the three largest schools that we have in ag education in terms of students served are in the metropolitan, seven-county metropolitan district, one of which the largest is Forest Lake, which has four instructors and 780-some students in that program there. We also have about 60% of the students that are not from agricultural farm backgrounds. And I think that might surprise a lot of people, that they are people from the towns and cities and even the suburbs. We serve many different kinds of areas today. It's not production agriculture anymore. It's things like biotechnology and agricultural economics and natural resource sciences and plant sciences, horticulture, and leadership training. Beyond that, I want to make one point. These are not simply classes. They are a program of study in our particular area. And furthermore, it's a community-based type of education that's interdisciplinary in nature. It has an experiential laboratories for almost all the classes. They are career exploratory and provide a leadership component in almost all cases. The point of that is that all of those things do increase costs. And I would give you one idea. It was mentioned earlier about the fact that there had been at one time in the state, we actually did have what this bill calls for in terms of funding by the state, and it's been decreased for over a number of years. But presently, we do have a 25% in-district discretionary levy that is involved, which we would hope we would not lose, even if the state does become involved in additional funding. With that, Madam Chair, I would mention to you one last thing. We, too, also, we have 300 agricultural career areas in Minnesota that are served, 350,000 jobs that are more jobs than 3M, Target, and Northwest Airlines put together.
Thank you very much. Since the hearing went about 5 minutes over, I'm going to ask first for public testimony before the legislator's questions. Is there any public testimony? Okay, then Representative Detmer, and then Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a two-part question. Is this, you mentioned about a levy, is this an equalized levy? Do voters get to vote on this levy?
Representative Faust.
Thank you for bringing up that question, and thank you, Madam Chair. What happens is that the school boards have the authority to put this levy on now without voter approval. What this bill does is it matches that levy amount. Just about every school district in the state uses that levy, and most of them are using the max allowable on that levy. Not all of them, but most of them. So it is a levy that right now the school boards have authority over.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Second part, does it go to all schools have the ability to do this, not just wealthy or poor schools?
We can do all the schools except yours.
Yeah. That's what he was afraid of.
It goes to any school that does the levy. So it's a matching on the levy, so if your school does not use the levy, then they don't get it. But like I said, just about every school does the levy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Representative Morrow.
Madam Chair, Representative Faust, I'm looking on 2.11 through 2.14, Subdivision 1B, Revenue Uses. And maybe it's the school board chair and me who would like more local control and less reporting. I'm wondering about the possibility of removing Subdivision 1B, which currently limits up to 10% of the revenue may be spent on equipment purchases, and then also requires a report. But I have to say, I don't know the history of this subdivision, but I would at least propose to you that perhaps the subdivision could be removed.
Representative Faust.
I don't disagree with you, and I think that is something that we should take a look at further down the line. But for now, this is where it's been, and so we're not making any change at this point in time. But I do agree with you, especially when you look at some of the equipment, as expensive as it is. Mm-hmm. Pine Tech, for example, has one piece of equipment that's $100,000. So, you know, that would be pretty tough for high school to swallow, but I do agree with you.
This may be a limitation. Thank you, Madam Chair. That actually works against, then, the very purpose of your attempt to get more money into career and technical education if you can't actually buy the equipment.
That would be
correct. Representative Faust. So should this bill be taken off the table for inclusion in the omnibus bill? It sounds like you've got a project, the two of you, to work that out. Representative Hyde-Griffin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a general comment, thank you for having all of the bills you had forth today. There was a lot of good
good ideas. And Representative Dabney, thank you again for presenting your bill. But Representative Falls, every time I turn around, I see a lot of common sense, and so it's good to see you come up with these common sense bills. But thank you for bringing this one forth. This is something that, Representative Gladley, we've had discussion over the last 4 years in this committee. And it's good that you bring it forth, because it's an issue that is very, very important when we talk about globally, how we're outsourcing our jobs. I just had a company up in Glenwood, Wasp, that just about turned down a $35 million job, a big contract, because they couldn't find enough welders. I've got a son-in-law working at Rogers. They like to put another third shift on diesel mechanics. They can't find enough mechanics. So, and you talk to all the vocational people. There's almost 100% placement. The students that graduate from VOTEC. I've had two students from my own sons graduate from VOTEC, went on and got a job at a place and finished their 4-year college with the company paying their job. So it's something that I'm glad you brought forth, and it's something we need to look at very seriously. Thank you.
Looks like another co-author for your bill, Representative Faust. And I think we're going to have to end because the time is up, and Representative Faust renews his motion for House File 806 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you very much. And with the little bit of time remaining, Representative Demmer asked if he could make a short comment.
Well, Madam Chair, I just want to comment on the green sleeves, Madam Chair, that we get. And I don't know, Ms. Mandelman.
Could you speak into your mic, please?
Oh, turn up the volume. I don't know if Ms. Mandelman or Ms. Patrick is responsible, or you, Madam Chair, for the green sleeves.
Definitely not me.
But I would like to thank you, because this organization, this is inside stuff, the public doesn't see this, but this organization method for our bills is very helpful, and I really appreciate it, so thank you.
Thank you, Representative Demmer. And we certainly should thank Ms. Mandelman and Ms. Patrick, and also Maggie and Megan, our two pages, who are in the front row, who I have seen actually putting a lot of stuff in these green folders that are masterminded by these two and implemented by those two. So that's a very, very good comment. We often don't thank the staff as much as we should. Thank you very much, and the meeting is adjourned.